Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast. My name is Darren McDonald and I am not in the best shape of my life. We are going to be talking about what's going on in baseball as spring training is going on. Can you believe it? It is the morning of Tuesday, February 13th as we are recording this. The Dodgers and the Padres have already had their pitchers and catchers report to spring training because they are starting early because of their Korea series. Everybody else is reporting in the days to come. So spring training is here, but there are still so many free agents out there, as we keep talking about on this podcast. The offseason is clearly going to linger into the spring, maybe into March, maybe even into the season itself. We will see. But we're going to talk about it on this show, and with me to talk about it is my colleague Anthony Franco. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Hope you're enjoying the nice balmy spring weather up there in Toronto.
It has been very springy for the most part, sunny, and in the metric system, above zero in terms of the temperature. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, and I will not learn. So, yes, baseball is happening. We got a deal last night. An interesting deal at this late stage of the offseason. Jorge Soler going to the Giants. 3 years, $42 million. Just broke last night in the wee hours. How did you feel about this, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, it seems all right. This is about what we predicted at the start of the offseason. I think, you know, we weren't alone there. I think most people who did the kind of contract predictions thought he would get 3 years at something around this salary. Now it's interesting because John Morosi yesterday had reported that Soler's camp was holding out for three for most of the offseason, and that kind of the stumbling block was the teams didn't want to go past two. And clearly the Giants, you know, I don't know if blinked is the right word, because I don't think they necessarily overpaid, but they were willing to give him that third year and push it across, even though generally late in the offseason, the expectation is that maybe the players are more likely to move off their asking price. And Soler, I think, basically stuck to what was expected.
Now, Soler is an interesting fit for the Giants because obviously he's a tremendous power hitter, and that is something that the Giants have lacked. I thought it fascinating. I was reading our colleague Steve wrote up this signing late last night and pointed out that the Giants have not had a 30 home run hitter since Barry Bonds in 2004. So it's been 20 years since they've had anyone really with this kind of thump in the lineup. And Soler could do that, but also maybe he won't, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy, actually. No, obviously, it's a tough home park. I think it's been a little bit better the last couple of years because they changed the dimensions a few years ago. But not an easy home park. But Soler has the kind of power that I don't know that it necessarily matters. Like, he was pushing 50 homers in Kansas City and hit 36 last year in Miami. Those are tough parks too. So it's not like he's a guy who's taking advantage of Cincinnati and hitting wall scrapers. He just has huge power. So he's a volatile player just in general. The strikeout rate kind of goes up and down, and he's been an inconsistent hitter throughout his career. But I do think that Soler has the kind of overwhelming raw power that the difficult home park doesn't really matter for him. So I mostly like the fit. Where do you think he enters in positionally? Is he like a full-time DH there? And then what does that do with JD Davis or Wilmer Flores?
Yeah, I think that is the big question of this from here, is what the Giants do next. Because Soler is a good fit. They need some power, and he has the power for them. But yeah, so now even if he is a full-time DH or playing some outfield, either way, it's kind of cluttering things, I think. Because if you look at it right now, their outfield mix, you got Jung-Hoo Lee in center, and then for the corners, you got Yastrzemski and Conforto. If Soler's in the DH spot, then that kind of pushes Wilmer Flores over to third, kind of splitting time with J.D. Davis, or, you know, splitting first base with Lamont Wade Jr. They also have, they signed Tom Murphy as like a pretty, I don't want to say expensive, but like a not nothing backup catcher / like DH type guy. Cause like Murphy's hurt a lot, but he hits well you know, sort of like a Mitch Garver light type, a guy who can catch, but also you kind of want his bat in the lineup. And so there's a lot of pieces there, and it does seem like somebody kind of has to get squeezed out. Like, is there, do you think that maybe Conforto or JD Davis is going to end up on the trading block here?
I don't really see it with Conforto, just because I don't think there's going to be interest. You know, it's, I forget exactly what his player option was. It might be like 18 or 19 million, which is a lot for a guy who missed 2 years ago with shoulder surgery. And then last year came back and was just okay. And he's not a particularly good defender. He's like a fine corner outfielder, but he doesn't play center field. And we're now going on like almost 4 years since he's been a clearly above average hitter. Davis, I could see, you know, it's, Davis is tough because depending on like which defensive metric you look at, and I'm sure Giants fans themselves have differing opinions on how capable he is at a third baseman. Like the Statcast metrics would suggest that he took a pretty big step forward with the glove last year, whereas defensive run saved was quite down on him again, as it has been throughout his career. And so if you think that he's an average-ish defensive third baseman, then he's a pretty good player because he hits for power, and it wasn't a great offensive year last year, but it was still slightly above average, and he's a good hitter. But if you think that he's, you know, a well below average defender who should probably play in first base or DH, then it's a lot tougher to shoehorn him out of the roster. So I think Davis probably gets moved.
I would be more open to the possibility of a Conforto trade, just because we've seen the Giants have already moved a lot of sort of guys who are making decent money coming off not good or injury marred years in 2023. They've already moved out Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani and Ross Stripling. And so it wouldn't surprise me if Farhan was able to find somebody who wanted Conforto either by eating the money or taking on somebody else that they, you know, because their pitching staff is weak. So maybe there's some pitcher who's making a similar salary who's also coming off a rough year. Like, hey, get DeSclafani back or something. I don't know. Like, you know, I could see it. But again, like, he's a left-handed hitter, so maybe they want him in there most of the time and find some way to, you know, get some more at-bats for the righties or whatever. You know, like, it's, they seem to really like platoons and mixing guys in and out of the lineup. So I don't know. Maybe they have some galaxy-brained way of doing it that I am not smart enough to see. But, yeah, it will be interesting because they are still so – coming up next for the Giants, we've talked about how maybe this will lead to a trade of Davis or somebody, but also they still are thought of as one of the better fits for the remaining free agents. Does this Soler deal change it or make it tighter, or what do you think?
I don't really think so. Obviously it doesn't affect their pursuit of a, you know, if they were going after Montgomery or Snell, you know, I mean, maybe financially, but they have a ton of payroll room relative to where they were, both when they were spending at like the top of the market a couple of years ago, and even over the last couple of years. Now they're still well above their previous payroll, or well below their previous payroll levels. You know, I mean, we talked about sort of the trickle down effects at third base potentially with Soler at DH, but I don't think that this rules them out on Chapman. You know, I mean, Bellinger was probably a tough fit at this point anyways, once they went after Jungkook Lee. So that one's kind of tough for me to see. Like, I don't know where he would play necessarily, unless they found a trade partner for Conforto and went after Bellinger, but that feels like a long shot. But I think Chapman and the pitchers still remain very much in play.
So if they got Chapman, then is it, you know, we're talking multiple trades, like Davis, Flores, you know, a couple guys are on the table then in that scenario?
You have to trade Davis at that point, but I think you could still keep Flores and just sort of bounce him around the infield. I mean, like Lamont Wade Jr., you probably want a right-handed bat to pair with him at first base. And so I think Flores could play that role and then sort of hang around his injury insurance. You know, they still, Farhan Zaidi, their president of baseball operations, talked about wanting some sort of insurance at shortstop, which they haven't gotten so far this year. And so it looks like they're just kind of going to turn it over to Marco Luciano, who's a very good prospect, but hasn't done anything at the major league level yet and had a lot of strikeouts in Double A last year. And so it's like, you know, Chapman's not going to play shortstop for them necessarily. And obviously Flores isn't going to do that either. but maybe you have Tyro Estrada as like a fallback who could occasionally slide over to shortstop if Luciano's really struggling, and you could plug Flores in at second base, something like that. So I think you could keep Flores just as a depth guy around the infield.
Do you think, I'm operating under the assumption that the Giants probably don't want to pay the luxury tax, or at least go over the luxury tax line at this part of the offseason. You know, maybe if the season is going especially well, they would go over via a midseason trade. But they're currently, according to Roster Resource, they're at 213 as their CBT number. And the line is 237, so that gives them $24 million of space. So it is getting a little tight if they want to stay under and get Chapman or Snell or Montgomery, because those guys are probably looking for something about that range on an average annual value.
That's true. Although if you assume that, particularly with Chapman, if you assume that is the precursor to a Davis trade, he's making almost seven, and you could probably offload that entire salary.
Right. All right. Well, interesting stuff with the Giants. I don't think they're done. So even though spring training is ramping up here, still lots going on with that club and many others. Let's talk about some other stuff that's been going on around the league. Gary Sanchez signed with the Brewers for 1 year and $7 million. What do you think about this one?
seems a little low to me. Now, you had him at, what, about 6 years and $350 million.
It's true. I was trying to get Sanchez onto the top 50 in the winter. I thought he could get like, I don't know, like 218 or something like that.
I also thought he could too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that much.
Didn't happen. But yeah, no, I'm a Gary Sanchez apologist. I think he's very fascinating. I mean, I'm not a psychologist or whatever, but I think it's a situation where the huge start and the tremendous expectations at the beginning of his career have prevented a lot of people from seeing that he's actually just pretty good. And a lot of people just were eager to label him as a bust because of the weak parts of his game. Like, obviously he wasn't great at blocking and he struck out and had some low batting averages. But still, if you look at his career, every full season, he's been at least worth a win and a half roughly by Fangraphs, and his defense has gradually gotten better. And he's still not hitting for average, but he's going to give you like 25, 30 home runs if he's in there every day. And so I think he's just a solid player, but some people have just like, they can't see that. And not even just like fans, like obviously fans get emotional gut reactions and whatever, and that's fine. But he had to settle for a minor league deal last year. So it was also the industry decision makers who weren't considering him worth even a roster spot a year ago. And so I think because of that, I think I sort of stumped for him a little bit. And I'm a bit of a believer. So, of course, I think it's great coup for the Brewers if I think he's worth, like you said, 6 years, $300 million, and they got him for 1.7. But how do you like the fit for the Brewers, Anthony?
Yeah, I think it works well enough. Are you surprised that he didn't get a place where he's not going to be the starting catcher over William Contreras? Now, they didn't really have a backup catcher. It was like going to be Eric Hosse, who was coming off a really bad year, both offensively and defensively. So upgrading them at number two catcher and then maybe rotating Sanchez through DH every once in a while, that all seems fine to me. But are you surprised that he didn't get a job as just a clear-cut number one catcher somewhere?
I am a little surprised. I think both of the Florida teams made sense. I think, you know, if you're a fan of the Rays or the Marlins, you were probably looking at this and being like, well, why didn't we just give him like 1.8 and our starting catching job? So I guess the Rays are tight on payroll, even after giving up Glasnow, and the Marlins seem to have some sort of like moral commitment to not signing anybody to a free agent deal this winter. So yeah, so I was a little surprised, but also at the same time, I think the way baseball is now, nobody has just one catcher. And, you know, I was writing, I can't remember what article I was writing this week, but I was writing something and I realized that I looked up catching playing time last year in 2023, and JT Realmuto was the only catcher to play as a catcher more than 116 games. And so basically every team is operating a two catcher system now. So, you know, Gary is, you know, the Brewers clearly have Contreras as their 1A catcher, but he's going to be back there.
Yeah. I think you you and Steve may have touched on the Junis signing with the last podcast that might have come like right before you recorded the last one. But between Junis and Sanchez, they basically reallocated the salary that they would have paid to Corbin Burns if they hadn't traded him. And then obviously they brought in Joey Ortiz and DL Hall as like major league ready pieces from the Burns trade. So how do you feel about, you know, it, knowing now what they did with the money that they saved, how do you feel about both how the team looks for 2024 in comparison to how they did 10 days ago and just sort of the future outlook for them?
Well, I think this is what they always do is they will make a move that could hurt them in the short term, but will pay off in the long term. Like we saw with the Hader deal, it clearly hurt them in the short term, but then they got, you know, they got Robert Gasser out of it and then eventually got Contreras out of it by flipping Esteri Ruiz. And so, you know, having Burns not on the 2024 team hurts. Adding Junis, Sanchez, Ortiz, Hall could end up making up for some of Burns, but it's like really, I don't know. If I was an expert and could predict to you how valuable Ortiz and Hall are going to be this year, then I'd be working for a team and I wouldn't, you know. So I don't know. It's a toss-up, but the thing for the Brewers is that they're going to have Ortiz and Hall 5 years down the road as opposed to just this year. So I don't know. I think that it's kind of this hope for them that, you know, maybe you end up as a wash, you give up Burns, and maybe you can end up as a wash in 2024 while still getting better in the future. But I don't know if that's going to pay off. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that'll make sense. You know, I think if having those four guys approximate the Burns production is probably a bit optimistic. And obviously, it's not a direct one-to-one comparison because, you know, four players being worth a combined five wins or something like that, as opposed to just one, you'd still rather have the one player because there's like an opportunity cost with the other roster spots that you're using and things like that. So it's not a perfect comparison, but I do think they took like a slight downgrade in 2024, but maybe not as much as it had seemed, at least in the initial aftermath of the Burns trade, because they reinvested the money. And I like the money that they spent on both Sanchez and Junis. I thought both those guys probably should have gotten 2 years, and they were pretty good value pickups for them at this point in the offseason.
It also seems that they were just reading the market a little bit, because it seems like this offseason, a lot of pitchers were getting paid really, really well, and a lot of bats have just been sitting there. Even as we're recording this, you know, JD Martinez is still out there, and you know, Brandon Belt is still out there. You know, like there are lots of cheap power bats available, whereas pitching was hard to come by. And so, you know, they were able to use that high demand for pitching to trade Burns and then just get, you know, Hoskins and Sanchez, because they were just sort of sitting there without paying too much money. But that has sort of like transformed the roster. You know, they play in, I think, is what is generally considered a pretty hitter friendly park, but I was looking at it and I think their runs scored last year was, I don't know, like 20th or something, but they had the least runs allowed. It's a very, very pitching forward team last year, and it seems like they've shifted that. I mean, I don't know if they're done, but they've shifted that, and their 2024 club will presumably score more runs by having Hoskins and Sanchez, and maybe Jackson Churio debuts and is a success right away. But obviously without Burns and Woodruff, then the pitching will be less. So maybe it can all work out as a wash. I don't know. Okay. But what else happened this week? Do you want to talk about Yasmani Grandal? Does that interest you?
He's a catcher.
He is a catcher. It's sort of interesting that him and Sanchez came off the board like one day after another, mini run on catchers, because the Pirates were linked to Sanchez and signed Grandal instead. And now they have like eight catchers, even though Andy Rodriguez is out for the season because of Tommy John or whatever, some kind of UCL elbow surgery that's going to keep him out all year. They have a lot of catchers now.
Yeah, it's not great news for Ali Sanchez. Henry Davis is still going to be the starter there, right? You don't think that Grandal's coming in as a number one catcher?
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know. Henry Davis still has options, so I don't know. Would it surprise you if he was in AAA getting his catching work down there?
I guess maybe it depends on just how much you think that the Pirates consider themselves legitimate contenders. Mm-hmm. because if your main goal is to develop Davis, then I think it's fine to send him back to Indianapolis and let him work on catching at that point. But if you plug Grandal in as your starting catcher and rely on like Grandal and Jason DeLay, you're basically just punting that position at this point. And so if you think that they're like a viable threat in NL Central that doesn't really have a clear cut favorite, then to me, I would rather just see Davis back there and at least in the beginning and see how his defense looks. And if it's completely untenable and he's has to go back to AAA, or they just decide like, yeah, this guy is just the corner outfielder, he can't catch, then maybe you pivot to Grandal. But I would rather see Davis as a starter early in the season.
But I guess there's an argument that even putting Davis in as the everyday catcher is also punting the position a little bit, maybe, because he didn't really catch last year. So what are the odds he's just going to come in and be a really good catcher, like from a defense and game calling point of view? You know, the Pirates don't have an amazing pitching staff. And so plugging in an unproven catcher, and he also didn't even really hit at the major league level last year. And so it seems like either path, either handing the position over to Davis and saying, let's see what you can do, or having him in AAA and being like, you have to earn your way past Yasmani Grandal and Ali Sanchez and Jason DeLay into this position. Either way, it's not great, or could be not great.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of downside there. Obviously, the Andy Rodriguez injury really hurts. I do wonder, I don't have any like actual evidence to support this, but I do wonder if Davis breaking in is like a, you know, you're trying to develop him as a catcher, if it's maybe a little bit helpful for him, the fact that the pitching staff isn't that great and like they're running out guys like Martin Perez and Marco Gonzalez and, you know, maybe Bailey Falter will be in the rotation. These guys don't have like overpowering stuff. And so I do wonder if that's sort of easier for him to sort of like build into being a big league catcher by catching guys who have kind of fringe MLB stuff in year one.
This galaxy brain take that they put together. A really crappy pitching staff just to help Henry Davis get acclimated to the big leagues.
I'm not saying this is their intent. I think their pitching staff is not very good because they don't want to invest in it. But I do still wonder if like as a pitch framer or as like a blocker or something, if it's easier to deal with guys who are sitting like 90 miles an hour, as opposed to if they had brought in, you know, a bunch of high octane, like guys with Mitch Keller's level of stuff, if they had three or four of them.
Right. Well, get excited, Pirates fans. I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, I suppose. It was interesting last year because it seemed like from the outside, because they gave him essentially no playing time behind the plate, that they did not believe in Davis as a catcher because they gave all the playing time to Endy. And then Endy got hurt. And so now it's sort of like, well, okay, well, I guess we have this year to see what we do with Davis. And it doesn't seem like they have a ton of faith in that because they've now added two catchers into the mix to sort of help him out. And there's no DH spot for extra at bats because they have McCutcheon in there. So, you know, it's only really the catching playing time to go around. Okay, what else we got here? AJ Preller and Jurickson Profar, their eternal love affair continues. This he came back on a 1 year, $1 million deal. The Padres, they're in a really tight spot. They needed some outfielders. They got one for dirt cheap in Profar. They probably still need a center fielder. They probably still need a DH. They probably still need some pitchers, but they don't have any money. How do you feel about Profar and the Padres right now, Anthony?
I mean, they probably still need a left fielder, too.
Hey-o!
yeah, I mean, Profar, whatever. It's $1 million. It's fine if you want to throw him a bench spot. But yeah, he shouldn't be your starting left fielder.
So their luxury tax number, supposedly, I mean, they're cutting payroll, but they also, since they have a lot of weird backloaded contracts, and so their competitive balance tax number is way higher than their actual payroll. And so it would be sort of silly to cut payroll and then pay the luxury tax. So it seems like their goal is to keep their CBT under. But they're at 215 right now, rounding up to 216. And the luxury tax starts at 237. So that only gives them $20 million to spend, and they have like four positions. So like, Are we going to see more of these profar type deals where they give like $2-3 million to people? Noah Syndergaard, like, who are they going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I could see them, yeah, like throwing $3 million at Syndergaard or to bring Eric Lauer back or something like that. I would like to see them spend, I don't know, like $7 or $8 million on like Michael Taylor, just to solidify center field a little bit. So you're not counting on Jose Azokar or like a Jackson Merrill or Jacob Marcy, one of their prospects, to step up and immediately be a viable major league regular. But yeah, I think that you're just going to see a couple more of these. Like, you know, Taylor should be attainable, but then something like, yeah, we're just going to throw $2.5 million at like two or three different players to build out the roster, take a shot on CJ Krohn, something like that. Just some sort of new face to compete for a spot on the bench, something like that.
All right, well, let's get to your questions. We got dozens of questions. Only have time for a few of them. Let's get to one from Doug, who says, which teams do you think have a chance to exceed expectations this year, like Arizona and the Reds last year? I think it will be the Pirates. That's Doug, not me. Anthony, surprise contender this year? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really share Doug's optimism on the Pirates, as we kind of discussed. But I like the Tigers quite a bit. I think that, one, the AL Central is, again, just kind of sort of there for the taking. Minnesota is probably still the favorite, but they've gotten worse just in terms of losing Sonny Gray and Kent Maeda. And Detroit, they brought in Mark Canha and they brought in Maeda and took a flyer on Jack Flaherty, which I like. And they've got a decent amount of controllable young pitching. I think Tarek Skubal, if he stays healthy, it's obviously a big if, but is like a legitimate number one caliber starter if you can get a full season out of him. And then we talked about Colt Keith before, but I really like the bat, and I think that there's a good chance that he hits pretty well just as a rookie. And then if you get, you know, Torkelson took a step forward kind of late in the season, and Riley Green's a pretty good player. Like, I think that they've got a lot of good, interesting young players who are coming around, and it's a division that's sort of there for the taking.
Yeah, the division is not great. The Royals have been active, but it's still, they're trying to claw up from losing over 100 games. The Twins are kind of not spending money. White Sox retooling or whatever they're doing. Guardians are asleep. So yeah, so that's a good pick. Since you took the Tigers, I like that pick. I'm going to say the Mets, which is a little different one. Probably not the same thing that Doug was asking about, because I think he was asking more for like a rebuilding team that's going to be good ahead of schedule. But I actually think, because the Mets failed so spectacularly last year and have been sort of not signing top free agents this offseason, that a lot of people are writing them off. But I actually don't think it's a terrible roster. You know, they still have really solid everyday guys in there, like Nimmo and McNeil and Lindor, Pete Alonso. I love Francisco Alvarez. He's got holes in his game, but that's a great catcher as far as I'm concerned. In the rotation, Sean Manaea. I love the Sean Manaea pickup. He had a really good second half last year. You know, they need a couple bounce backs. You know, like, you need Starling Marte to be healthy. You need Luis Severino to be better than he was last year. And I've seen some rumblings online this week, some people saying that he wasn't 100% healthy or was maybe tipping his pitches last year or something. But if you get him even like halfway back to the dominant ace he was a couple years ago, you know, I don't think it's a bad team. And, you know, these days you only need to be like hovering around 500 to be in the race. And so I think, just looking at this roster, oh, also they added a million relievers. And so they only need like two or three of those to be okay, with Edwin Diaz coming back. And then the bullpen's in decent shape. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad club. Am I wildly off base? What do you think?
Oh, I agree with that. They didn't really occur to me, because like, from the examples that Doug threw, I like zeroed in on the teams that haven't been playoff competitive in a long time and have a lot of young players. But I do think that the Mets are a good answer to this, because the general expectation is like, yeah, they're going to be bad, you know, maybe a fourth place team in the NL East, and they're not really in it. And, you know, they're not all in, but I do pretty much share your optimism with the lineup. Maybe I'm a little lower than you in the rotation, but I buy them as a viable wildcard contender.
It helps that the Marlins are doing nothing. So
yeah, they should be better than the Marlins.
Yeah. And the Nationals are not good. So yeah, I mean, Mets, if you're third in the division in today's playoff landscape, you have a chance. So it kind of depends, you know, like the Padres, like we talked about, kind of seem significantly weaker than they were last year. The Giants maybe are improved. I don't know. Central, it's like a million different ways the Central could go. I don't know. I don't think it's out of the question that the Mets are like 500-ish in the middle of the summer and people are surprised. So next question is from Thomas, who says, it's more of a proposal. Chapman to the Cubs for 1 year and $27 million, plus a $30 million mutual option for 25 with a $3 million buyout. Who says no?
Yeah, so if you, like, the mutual option doesn't really move the needle for the player. Like, so essentially what Thomas is proposing is basically like a 1 year, $30 million contract, because the mutual options are very unlikely to get exercised by both teams or both sides. And I don't think that Chapman is at the point where he's taking 1 year. You know, I mean, maybe we get to a position where he takes like three with an opt out. We've talked about this before, but
to me, Carlos Correa deal.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that he would get.
Not that money, but
yeah, as much money, but yeah, that sort of structure. But you know, we were talking about this morning, but I think that Chapman is going to have a hard time marketing himself as more appealing next offseason than he is this year. And so to me, I still think that he's in a position where he takes just whatever the maximum guarantee is, even if it's less than what he was hoping for at the start of the offseason.
Yeah, because he's about to turn 31. So he'll be going, if he plans on opting out and returning to free agency next year, he'll be about to turn 32. So yeah, if he wanted to build that case in his mind, he would have to be optimistic that he could stay healthy this year and that, you know, supposedly if his finger injury sapped him of some of his power in 2023, then, you know, he could produce more at the plate with better health, but that's not a guarantee. So yeah, I don't think he would take one, but yeah, I think at this point in the winter, like, some creative structures have to be considered, right? Like what we saw with Correa, where some sort of thing with opt-outs, just so you have some money in the bank, but if everything goes right, you have another chance. It's as the winter goes on, it gets harder and harder to see somebody just putting down, you know, a straight 6 year, $150 million deal or something like that.
Yeah, and I agree with Thomas that if we got to a point where he took something shorter term, even if it's not just one, that the Cubs would make probably the most sense out of any team. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think Cubs are a good fit. I think he could still fit on the Jays. We talked about the Giants earlier in the podcast. He could fit there, and then they would trade J.D. Davis. There's a couple fits, but Chicago makes a lot of sense because they third base is one of the weakest positions on their roster, and they still have money to spend. I think they're like $30 million from the luxury tax or something like that, so they could do that. I know a lot of Cubs fans want Bellinger to come back, but I mean, they have Pete Crow Armstrong there, and they got Michael Bush for first base, so I don't know. I think Chapman could fit maybe a little bit better. Okay, we have time for one more question here. Will wants to know if Carlos Santana makes the Twins better.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a huge upgrade, but for $5.25 million, you know, you're not going to get a superstar or anything like that. I like the fit. They needed, Santana's a switch hitter, but he's better from the right side. And the Twins were much better against right-handed pitching last year, so they needed some sort of righty presence against left-handed pitching, and Santana provides that. And I think that sort of the biggest selling point for him is that he's incredibly durable. He has basically spent almost no time on the injury list for his entire career. You know, I think he had maybe a knee injury when he was a catcher with Cleveland as a rookie, where he got hit in like the home plate collision that was part of the reason that they changed the rule. I think that's right. But since he moved to first base, he's basically never been hurt. And for Minnesota, they're counting on Alex Kirilloff at first base. And Kirilloff's a very talented young hitter, but he's been hurt all the time. And so just to have Santana there as kind of a stable veteran who you can expect to be healthy if Kirilloff requires any time on the IL makes sense as a complimentary piece for me.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for coming on this week, Anthony.
Yeah, of course, Darren. Anytime. Thank you.
All right, folks. So by next week, even more spring training will have happened. Position players and all of that stuff. We'll be finding out about who has terrible injuries and all that kind of stuff. And maybe one of the big free agents will have signed in the past week. We will see. So look out for that episode and go to MLBTradeRumors.com for all the news. And if you sign up for the front office package, it gets rid of the ads and you get to use the contract tracker and some other stuff. It's pretty cool. So do that. And we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLBTradeRumors.com.